Does forming your skill-based groups feel a little mysterious? You have the screening data, but you're still asking, okay, how do I use this to move students forward? A good friend of the podcast, Dr. Stephanie Stoller, runs the Reading Science Academy, and she created an exclusive grouping resource bundle free for Literacy in Color listeners. You'll get Stephanie's cheat sheets for grouping students at the beginning, middle, and end of the year, plus a video that walks you through a real classroom example. I'll always proclaim that I myself am a proud Reading Science Academy member for life, and I can genuinely say that the quality of the resources and professional learning is top notch. The Facebook community is also one of the most supportive spaces I've experienced. Reading Science Academy is honestly one of the first places I go whenever I have a question about literacy instruction or assessment. So go to readingscienceacademy.com/color to get your free grouping resource bundle today. You're listening to episode 86 of Literacy in Color. Welcome to the Literacy in Color podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Sullivan, a science of reading advocate with over a decade of experience as a reading interventionist and literacy coach. I'm passionate about making evidence-based instruction both effective and engaging. If you're interested in captivating our learners on reading fluently and understanding language, or as I like to call it, keeping it colorful, then you've found the right place. Each week, we'll explore intriguing lit bits and practical strategies around the science of reading and structured literacy to help you be colorful and teach colorfully. Are you ready to bring literacy to life? Let's color outside the lines and make an impact together. Let's talk about a moment every teacher has seen. A student is using a word like fantastic in their writing, and they start writing the most salient sounds. F-N-T-S-T-K. No vowels in sight. Then perhaps they pause. They look at the ceiling. Oh, wait, my teacher told me every word needs a vowel. No vowel, no word. They erase. They start again. Maybe this time they get down F-A-N and tackled that first syllable. But gosh, what comes next? They're stumped. When we consider Aries phases or Gentry's stages, there certainly is a developmental progression of spelling. The jump, though, from single-syllable phonetically regular words to multisyllabic words can be a huge one, especially when we consider vowel flexing, the schwa sound, and even reduced or collapsed syllables. Spelling words like sat, ship, and soil with accuracy does not quite require the same lift as spelling words like comfortable, accommodation, or even kernel. And I'm not talking about the kernel of popcorn. We all know that word spelled C-O-L-O-N-E-L. I mean, there's not even an R in sight. And side note, it's because it comes from the Latin colonella, which means the commander of the column of soldiers. So fun fact. But that initial bank of words, sat, ship, and soil, they all represent words that are one syllable and have one vowel sound. The grapheme-phoneme correspondences, once we learn our phonics concepts, are reliable. Longer words, though, can feel really intimidating to spell. And the truth is, many students who can read these words may still struggle to spell them accurately. So phonology gives us a wonderful entry point into this work, but phonology alone can't help us make all of our spelling decisions in every single scenario. So today's episode is all about multisyllabic spelling strategies. Spelling longer words isn't about memorizing hundreds of individual words by reciting 12-letter sequences together over and over and over again. But I'm not going to lie, I do love a good mnemonic or a spelling song. I used to sing the word because to the tune of Happy Birthday with my second grade intervention students, B-E-C-A-U-S-E. And I also taught my daughter how to spell her name to the tune of Bingo. But when we consider spelling for multisyllabic words, we really need to tune into how these words are built or structured. So in this episode, we're going to talk about three powerful supports for spelling longer words. First, a phonological approach, breaking a word into syllables. Secondly, a morphological approach, identifying the structural units or morphemes in a word, or even tapping into word families to inform spelling. And thirdly, a strategy many of us secretly still use today, a spelling voice. So these strategies help move students from feeling overwhelmed by long words to realizing that they actually can have the tools to figure them out. So tip number one, syllabication. Think about the difference between spelling the words fan versus fantastic. Suddenly, students have to hold much more information in their working memory while they write. So one of the best ways we can support them is to reduce the cognitive load. And one way we do that is by chunking words into syllables. So here, we'd be using a phonological approach to spelling, thinking about the sound units. Instead of trying to spell the entire word at once, we teach students to segment the word into syllables. So let's take the word fantastic. Instead of trying to spell that whole word in one time, we segment it fan-tas-tic. Now we can spell each syllable one at a time. Fan, F-A-N, tas, T-A-S, and tic, T-I-C. This works really well when the syllables fit into those pretty little boxes. Words like volcano, hamburger, and tornado, where the pronounced syllables match up predictably to the written syllables, are great examples of this work as well. In order to do this work, though, we need to backtrack a bit. Students need to know what a syllable is and what a vowel is. And you'd be surprised at the amount of upper elementary, middle, or even high school students who may not know this information. So we can explain that syllables are like the beats in our language. My first name is Michelle. Michelle. It has two syllables. My last name is Sullivan. Sullivan. Three syllables. And remember, gradual release. I do, we do, you do. You might walk through some examples with students and then have them syllabify words themselves to ensure they understand the concept. I also want to note that syllables can be co-articulated, so don't get too hung up on the perfect breaking points. Take my last name again. Is it Sullivan or is it Sullivan? Both can work. And sometimes our sound smushing makes it hard to distinguish precise division. Now, traditionally, you may have students clap syllables, and I've done that too. But sometimes what we get are 2 to 3 syllable words and then 5 to 7 claps. Can any of you relate to the claps getting out of hand? Older students may like pounding their fist on a desk or in the palm of their hand to count syllables. I personally really like a humming strategy where we can hum the word. So Michelle becomes hmm-hmm. Sullivan would be hmm-hmm-hmm. Why does that happen? Because every syllable has at least one vowel. Our vowels, A, E, I, O, U, and often Y, which these can also show up in teams as times, are open continuous sounds without any obstructed airflow. So it naturally will allow for a hum. One fun way to explain vowels to students is that vowels are the sounds you can sing. So think Whitney Houston, get that drum beat, boom. And I will always love you. Don't judge my singing voice, but you get the idea. Your mouth stays open. Your voice keeps going. It's a continuous sound. Another helpful trick for identifying syllables is the classic chin drop test. So each time your chin drops while saying a word, you've likely hit a new syllable. So place your hand horizontally under your chin and say, banana, ba-na-na, three drops. How about mysterious, mysterious, four drops. Unbelievable, unbelievable, five drops. And this connects to a helpful principle sometimes summarized as Eshalov, E-S-H-A-L-O-V. Every syllable has at least one vowel. So this comes from O'Connor, Beach, Sanchez, Bochian, and Flynn. And I like to even say every syllable has at least one written vowel for even more precision. So when students hear three syllables, they'll know that they need at least three written vowels in that word. So let's take a word like detective. We can hum it, hmm, hmm, hmm. Three syllables, we can syllabify it, detective. And then you could draw three lines. And remember, every line will need at least one written vowel. So we can spell that first syllable, D, D, E, D, E. Tech, T, Ek, T, E, C. And the third syllable, Tiv, T, I, V, T, I, V. And an orthographic convention tells me that English words don't end in V, so I need a final silent E. So this phonological awareness and matching speech to print gives students a strong starting place when spelling longer words. But this one also leads me to my second tip, because even with the word detective, IVE is a common suffix or morpheme. So tip number two is that we can use morphology and word relatives for multisyllabic spelling. So let's face it, a great deal of our multisyllabic words are also multimorphemic. So sure, we have a word like elephant, that's just one morpheme, but it's also safe to say, especially when we're dealing with the three plus syllable words, that morphemes are a common occurrence. Now, while syllables are units of pronunciation, morphemes are units of structure. Morphology is the study of the structure of words, including our prefixes, bases, and suffixes. And these structural meaningful units have consistent spellings despite shifts in pronunciation. So let's take a word like president, precedent, three syllables. But suddenly the schwa appears. Sometimes our vowel sounds get reduced, and schwa can be represented by any one of our vowels, A, E, I, O, U, or Y. So it can be really tricky to know what spelling to use. If we were to rely on phonology alone, I might think that there's a Z in there. I might think that the ending could be spelled INT. But let's think about the structure. This word has three meaningful units, a common prefix, P-R-E, a base, S-I-D-E, which carries this meaning of sit, and then a common suffix, E-N-T. So we have P-R-E plus S-I-D drop the E plus E-N-T, and that would give us president. The thing is, in order to do this type of analysis, we have to have knowledge of working with morphemes so that our brains even have these orthographic representations to pull these chunks together. But let's say perhaps you don't have knowledge of all the affixes in the world. We can also tap into meaning. So a president is one who sits before or presides over a meeting, a company, or even a government. So think about the word relationship, word relatives, president, preside. What do you notice about the vowel sounds in preside? Depending on how you pronounce it, you might even emphasize the first part, preside, where you might clearly hear a long E, but if not, that second syllable, preside, I clearly hear a long I. So this word relative also cues me into the correct spelling of the vowels in president. So the stem, preside, which essentially is made up of the morphemes PRE plus SIDE, It helps anchor the spelling of president. And then guess what? We see the same pattern in reside and resident. And this tip is especially helpful for multisyllabic words that have collapsed syllables. Consider the word definitely. Some people may pronounce it as definitely, four syllables, but others may reduce it all the way down to definitely, three syllables. Since English is a stress-timed language, not a syllable-timed language like Spanish, this can happen quite a bit. But we can tap into the structure. We can think about the related words definite or define as word relatives, and that can help you figure out the morphemic units. So we have DE plus FINE plus ITE plus LY. And we also have a couple drop E conventions happening with that base in the first suffix. So this kind of knowledge is what Sarah Paul and I share inside of our courses and coaching calls through Logos Literacy Academy. And if this interests you, be sure to check out the links in the show notes for our offerings. But essentially, when we think about morphology from multisyllabic spelling, understanding the structure of words, sure, it helps with that one word, but it also helps you understand the system at hand. When we lean into semantics, what does this word mean? We can lean into those structural units and or think about word relatives to assist with spelling. So through this kind of approach, students begin to see that spelling isn't random. English spelling preserves meaning across related words, and we see the same morphemes consistently spelled the exact same way from word to word to word all throughout the system. So when students get stuck on a tricky spelling, we can ask questions like, how is this word built? Or do you know a related word? Sometimes the answer reveals the spelling. Every teacher's heard it. How do I help my kid read at home? Now, you've got something real to tell them. Reading.com is the only reading app that turns parents into reading teachers, not with games or gimmicks, but with a real phonics-based system that guides them lesson by lesson. It's not a game that keeps kids quiet in the back seat. It's a system that makes parents your partners, and it picks up right where your classroom leaves off. So tell your parents to check out reading.com. Visit reading.com/color for 60% off the annual plan today. So let's wrap up with tip number 3, using a spelling voice. So this final strategy doesn't feel very scientific, but it certainly is a powerful one that many of us remember from childhood, and it most certainly works. A spelling voice. This is when we exaggerate the pronunciation of a word to help remember how it's spelled. Lindsay Kemeny even shares about it in her book, 7 Mighty Moves. So for example, let's name the word Wednesday. Many people learn to say it in their head like Wednesday. And even though we don't pronounce the word that way in everyday speech, the spelling voice helps us remember the letters. And just a fun fact here, what's up with the D in Wednesday? It's a historical marker. So in Old English, it translated to Woden's Day, and Woden is from Old Norse mythology. But back to that spelling voice. To this day, I still remember my second grade teacher, shout out to Miss Fitzgerald, who later became Mrs. Schaefer. She taught us that inside together, it had 3 mini words, to, get, her. Even though technically, you know, TH is working as a digraph in that word. But to this day, this is how I spell the word in my head, to get her. Many primary teachers even like to use this strategy with some high-frequency words. So a word like something, we can use our spelling voice and say something with a long O sound, right? You can certainly invite students to create their own spelling voices, and those often become the ones that they remember best. So at the end of the day, when students are spelling longer multisyllabic words, we want them to have a reliable toolbox of strategies to tap into. Sometimes we break the word into syllables. Sometimes we try to think about morphemes. And sometimes we even use a spelling voice. Because the truth is, no single strategy works for every single word. Some multisyllabic words have multiple morphemes, but some have only one, where morphemic analysis isn't even possible. Some multisyllabic words follow predictable phonology, and others, not so much. But one of the most important things we can teach students is metacognition about spelling. In other words, which strategy should I use for this word? Should I break it into syllables? Should I think about morphemes? Should I think of a related word? Or maybe teach myself a spelling voice for this one? At the end of the day, this work is about understanding how sounds, structure, and meaning all work together in our language. And once students realize that long words can be broken down and investigated, spelling suddenly feels much less intimidating. So the next time a student freezes when they're spelling a long word, remind them that long words aren't impossible. They're just built from smaller pieces. And English spelling isn't chaotic. It's remarkably consistent when you understand how all of the layers of the system work together. Thank you so much for tuning into Literacy in Color. I hope today's episode left you feeling both inspired and equipped with something new to add to your teaching toolkit. If you're enjoying this podcast, it would truly mean so much to me if you'd leave a 5-star review. It helps other educators find the show and join our colorful community. And don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button so you never miss an episode. For more tips, tools, and resources, be sure to check out the links in the show notes at michelleinthecolorfulclassroom.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you next week. Until then, be colorful and teach colorfully. Do you ever catch yourself saying, English is just crazy? Maybe your students come across a tricky word and you tell them, you just have to memorize that one, or this is the part you have to know by heart. But deep down, you know it's still confusing. Here's the truth. English isn't random. It's a wonderfully complex system, and once you understand how that system works, through sound, structure, and meaning, everything changes. That's what Sarah, Paul, and I teach inside Mastering Morphology. This isn't another curriculum. It's deep teacher knowledge inside a practical comprehensive course that finally shows you how words really work. No more exceptions, no more gimmicks or patching holes with memorization or phonics alone. It's time to go beyond sound it out and give your students the framework they need to truly understand words. So if you're ready to stop guessing and start teaching with confidence, join us inside Mastering Morphology. Enrollment is open now, so we invite you to click the link in the show notes to get started.